You're listening to City Lights. My guests today are experts in film. Matthew Bernstein is professor and chair of the Film Studies Department at Emory University. Brett Wood is an independent filmmaker here in Atlanta. He produces DVDs and Blu-rays for Kino Lorber, which has just released Pioneers of African American Cinema. Welcome to City Lights.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Thank you, Lois.
Yes. Well, Brett, you supervised almost every aspect of Pioneers of African American Cinema, including the cover design. What does the collection present?
It's about 20 hours of material, and I would say about 30 films of films, so-called race movies, made for segregated theaters between the World Wars, so from the mid-1910s to the early 1940s, a sort of a parallel universe removed from Hollywood, films made by and for African Americans.
Hmm. Well, how long a project was it? It seems like it must have been very exhaustive.
You know, I thought I had my ducks in a row. It was supposed to be a year. Here we are now, more than a year and a half later. It just came out less than a month ago, but I like to think it was worth the wait. It was originated as a Kickstarter project, and one of the best things about the experience is that when I would apologize to the donors, I'm sorry, we're running behind, everyone would be like, no, do it right. Take your time, do it right, and everyone's been really supportive. So that was very gratifying to hear.
That's very heartening indeed. So who were the pioneers?
I would say the best known is Oscar Michaud, and because he made films both in the silent era. He made the feature that is the earliest surviving feature film made by an African American, Within Our Gates. And he made films into the sound era, he made shorts, he made musicals, he made detective films. And he also made films about important race issues that delved a lot deeper than the films that were being made in Hollywood on race issues. And there's other filmmakers as well. There's Spencer Williams, who is a Texan who made films in the 1940s. But we also have some more unconventional filmmakers. We have the husband and wife team of James and Elois Gist, who made religious films, basically home movies, but with a lot of religious pageantry, the wages of sin kind of things. And they were made to be shown in churches rather than theaters. Mm. And we have Zora Neale Hurston, the great author, made documentary footage in the Gullah community of Beaufort, South Carolina, and in the logging camps of Florida. We tried to reach out and include as diverse a group of filmmakers as we possibly could.
So it really is a comprehensive look. The first film in the collection dates from 1915, the same year as the infamous Birth of a Nation. Matthew, tell us about the significance here.
Well, the earliest films are comedies. They were made by a white company, but using black actors. and, you know, they're sort of racist. At other points, they are genuinely funny. Actually, black filmmaking, independent race filmmaking, predates Birth of a Nation, but it really took up speed with the emergence of that film. And there were various attempts at filmmaking to counter it. And the most powerful and the most exciting one that's on the set is Within Our Gates by Oscar Michaud, which actually tells a story about a black woman who wants to return south and build a school for black children, but whose family was lynched. Mm. And this is probably the earliest on-screen surviving depiction of a lynching, and it's all there. There's no censorship in the film itself, although portions of it were censored heavily. Oscar Michaud was really a kind of maverick filmmaker, and he angered censorship boards everywhere, New York, Virginia, and so certain things had to be cut out in a number of his films. But that is a very, very powerful film. And, you know, this sense that African Americans needed to make their own films and couldn't rely on Hollywood And really the sort of the height, so it starts in the silent era with these silent shorts, or even before, there are earlier, I think the earliest known film is from 1912. And they continue into the sound era, which was, you know, and these filmmakers, they had so many obstacles to doing what they had to do. They had no money. They really kind of come into their own. Oscar Micheaux's Within Our Gates is released just as Hollywood is consolidating its ownership, not just of production, but of distribution and theater ownership. So, and part of that design, that vertical integration Hollywood achieved, was to keep out other filmmakers, not the major studios, like the Black Pioneers. And so they're really struggling to raise the money. In Micheaux's case, he had to distribute films personally. He would drive around the country to try to get exhibitors to show his films. And they had to promote them. And they didn't have the clout, the business clout of the major studios. So it was just an extraordinary effort. And when you watch these films, it's just an amazing window into Black life and Black beliefs. Micheaux himself was a huge fan of Booker T. Washington. So many of his films were about uplift. And so all these stories about people trying to build schools, there are stories about passing that the censors didn't like in the South very much. Mm-hmm. And he he just really went for melodrama in a very powerful way and with very reduced budgets. I mean, he wouldn't spend, I don't think, Brett, more than $15,000 on a film at a time when Hollywood is spending several hundred thousand, even on the silent films.
You mentioned him driving around the country asking exhibitors, what sorts of theaters screen these films? I mean, we think about so-called art film houses. Did they have those back then?
Well, they weren't art film houses. They were race houses. They were movie theaters that were separate, set apart from white theaters. And you take Atlanta, for example. So Atlanta had segregated theaters, most famously the Fox, with that line before in the balcony in the very top level that we preserved as part of preserving the Fox. But then even in Atlanta, you had on Auburn Avenue the variously called the Paramount, and it had nothing to do with Paramount Pictures. It was called the Royal for most of its existence. It was in the Oddfellows building, and this was a movie theater just for Black Atlantans to attend. Now, sometimes these race theaters would do a midnight ramble where whites were invited to come and attend. But for the most part, these were movies that were showing race films, but also the Hollywood films, but definitely the race films, catering their programming to the African-American audience. And at its height, Atlanta had eight of these theaters around downtown. There was the 81 on Decatur Street. There were some closer to Atlanta University. There were some south of the center city. So there was an audience. And it was kind of cruel because in some ways, you take someone like Richard Norman, who produced a charming action comedy called The Flying Ace. And he had great difficulty getting films into places, but we actually have records of him showing these films in Atlanta, the actual receipts, how many people attended, and it's just fascinating. And I like to say that they could only book, again, because of the popularity of Hollywood, Micheaux would only book a film of his for 2 or 3 days, and then he'd have to move on, whereas a Hollywood film would be booked for a full week. So that's another example of the clout they didn't have. But I will stop rambling in a moment. But I just want to say the importance of this set is it can't be overstated. To have these films all in one place, I had to travel to the Library of Congress in the early 90s to see about half of the films that are on this set because they were not available even on videotape. And certainly not in great condition. And so the work that Brett has done to bring these together, I mean, it's a huge boon for teaching the history of African-American cinema and for studying and just having access.
My guests are Brett Wood, Atlanta independent filmmaker and producer of the new DVD and Blu-ray series, Pioneers of African American Cinema, and Professor Matthew Bernstein, Chair of Film at Emory University. We'll be back after a short break. You're listening to City Lights on WABE Atlanta. music from Flying Ace, film we were just talking about. It's part of the Kino Lorber Collection, Pioneers of African American Cinema. Brett, earlier you mentioned race cinema. What exactly is race cinema?
As Matthew was saying, it's because films were not being made for black audiences in Hollywood, African Americans had to make the films themselves, had to distribute the films themselves, and had to find ways to exhibit the films themselves. So it really was this sort of parallel film industry completely removed from Hollywood. And I mean, for instance, we mentioned The Flying Ace that was made by a company in Jacksonville, Florida. There were companies in Philadelphia. There were companies in Chicago. So it's very much not Hollywood, both in the economic model, but also geographically. So wherever there was a community of African Americans, people would pool their resources and have these independent creative endeavors.
How did they come by the equipment, the artistry? I mean, others get to study film.
Well, someone like Oscar Michaud, you get out there and you make it happen however you can. And he was kind of a huckster in the best sense of the word. He would have dancers from the Cotton Club. At night, they would perform. And then by day, they would jump on a train and come out to New Jersey and perform numbers during the daytime that he would shoot for his films. And they would go back and perform that night. And, he would go through communities and raise money himself for the films. Then once he had enough, he would go make the film, and then he would start the process all over again, going to theaters to get the film shown.
It must have been thrilling. And, you know, in the early 20th century, film was still a very new art form. Did any of these directors, filmmakers, write about their experiences?
Not very much. And, you know, when we were putting the series together, people felt like, well, give us an interview with Michaud that we can put in our press materials. And everyone looked, and there's really no significant interview with Michaud. He might have written a piece about the challenges of being a filmmaker, pretty short pieces, but there was never sort of a career-spanning interview where anyone talked about his attitudes about the industry or about race. I think anything we have left of his writing are the novels he wrote, because he basically did the same thing as a fiction writer. He would write books and then basically sell them door to door. So we have that kind of writing, and we have the films he wrote. But we don't have that much really reflection on his own career or his own social political beliefs.
For much more serious, for the worst reasons, in some ways, the situation that Michaud and his colleagues faced was kind of like getting started on your own today, self-publishing and distributing, community film. I mean, it's amazing.
Oscar Michaud would have used Kickstarter, and he would have put sizzle reels on YouTube if he had lived during this period.
Have there been any retrospectives on him?
Oh, yes. Yes. There have been a number of them as films become restored more and more. People have done that. Actually, the Film Forum did a series of these films to celebrate the release of the DVD this past summer. another interesting thing about Michaud is he has an Atlanta connection. He came to Atlanta. He lived in Atlanta. He wrote in his novels about it. And he made two films about the Leo Frank case, one of which is not on this set, but he actually claimed to have been in the courtroom during the Leo Frank trial, which is really hard to believe.
And I should add, Matthew has written a book on screening a lynching.
Yes, the Leo Frank case on film and TV. So I have a chapter devoted to his films about the Leo Frank case. But he was a great self-promoter. But the thing is, too, when you watch these films, you can see the constraints of budget that the filmmakers are working with. They're sort of following Hollywood, but either because the prints are, again, Hollywood would issue hundreds of prints to distribute, the race filmmakers would only do five. So the fact that any of these films survive is kind of miraculous. Hmm. But you do see, you know, there are mismatched cuts. There are moments even when Michaud is giving direction to his actors who have forgotten their lines that he just left in the films.
But it's very still, meta.
It's very meta. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's kind of like The Room almost, but not not quite. But of great, great historical interest because of all the things they show. And then with The Flying Ace, this is made by a filmmaker, as Brett mentioned, based in Jacksonville, but he was a white filmmaker. And he doesn't tackle issues like passing and uplift, but he always felt that by making a movie about a flying ace, which there could not be a World War I black flying ace, but he was showing characters who were professional, doing exciting things, well-spoken, and so forth. So his was more like an implicit uplift rather
than... Did he live to see the Tuskegee Airmen?
Yes, yeah. He continued, you know, the sad thing, he continued through the late 20s. His career, which I've actually researched in some depth, is really fascinating because he makes a couple of films at the end of the teens and the early 20s, and they take off. I mean, theaters are packed. White audiences are coming to see these black action movies that he's making. He's a genre filmmaker. And he starts out great, but as the 20s progress, he can't make that kind of money anymore. Mm. And so he's struggling. He has to diversify. He's doing all these different things in and around film, including creating his own sound system. But he's already reached his peak early on. So it's very deceptive. And again, because Hollywood is consolidating in the 20s and starts producing these great feature films like The Big Parade and so forth, there's less room for this. Michaud himself is the one filmmaker who really survived the silent era and the transition to sound, because that was extremely costly and it was very hard to keep going. So he found new backers so he could make films. But his last film was in 1948, The Struggle. I don't believe it survives. Apparently it was not very good. But after World War II, Hollywood becomes more progressive in its depiction of African Americans. And you just say Sidney Poitier, right? And suddenly Hollywood is taking over depicting black life and trying to depict it in a more sustained and serious and engaged way. And that's the end of race filmmaking until, we might argue, blaxploitation.
Mm. Well, speaking of white filmmakers, Brett, what... When did you first become interested in African American cinema as an art form, and what inspired the project?
I've always been interested in films that have had difficult lives, films that haven't been celebrated and haven't been properly preserved. I like silent films. And the majority of silent films don't exist today. So I've always been fascinated in finding those hidden treasures or the things that no one else has seen. I've done a lot of research on exploitation films of the 1930s. In fact, I co-wrote a book with my wife, Felicia Feaster, called Forbidden Fruit, about these films like the drug scare films and Birth of a Baby films, and that would sort of tackle important issues in the most sensational terms possible, and these were independently produced and shown at midnight. So that sort of outsider cinema has always been of interest to me. And when I heard about these films, just in theory, there were films being made in the 20s and 30s with all black casts. I wanted to find them, and it was difficult to find them in the days of VHS. And so, like Matthew, a lot of times I would have to go to the archives and to see the films there because they just weren't commonly available.
Well, my guests have been Brett Wood and Matthew Bernstein. I should add the booklet included with the DVD collection produced by Brett Wood, Pioneers of African American Citizen Cinema, have some outstanding essays. And in the preface, it states, for every Ice Cube and Tyler Perry, every Will Smith and Spike Lee, there were pioneers who paved the way and set the tone for a new vision of African-American cinema that made space for them to exist. Brett Wood, congratulations on producing this important collection. Matthew Bernstein, thank you, as always, for your enthusiasm and the insight you bring to the art of film.
Thank you, Lois.
It was a pleasure.